Can a trip to the Colosseum do more for you than a year of psychotherapy? It worked for the great romantic poet Percy Bysshe Shelley. Christopher Woodward has something in common with Shelley. He loves ruins. Woodward spent a lifetime rambling through the remains of past structures. He recently took some time off as director of the Holborn Museum of Art in England to write the book In Ruins. He told Steve Paulson that Shelley was sunk into a deep depression when he visited a site of ancient glory.
He was utterly dejected, felt that all of Europe was in chains and unable to write. And then, living in Rome, he started to walk out to the baths of Caracalla, which were the greatest of all Roman baths. They were also built by the cruelest of Roman emperors, using slaves. And what he found there was a kind of jungle with figs and myrtle and all sorts of flowers growing in these ruins. And what he saw was not just flowers growing, but their roots were actually pulling apart the bricks. And so to him, there was a kind of hope in this, because it said to him, looking at the ruins 2,000 years old, that the future would show that democracy and liberty expressed by the flowers would overcome tyranny expressed by these great high walls. And he sat down and wrote Prometheus Unbound, which is one of his masterpieces and one of the finest pieces of writing of all 19th century poets. Now, if you go to the same site again today, everything has concrete paths, metal fencing. And it's not so much the archaeologists, it's the people who run these complexes. If they had been in charge before Shelley got there, we wouldn't have the masterpiece he wrote.
I would think one of the basic appeals of a place like ancient Rome and going back to see the ruins there is that there's something very humbling about the whole experience. I mean, you're seeing how one of the great empires of history crumbled, and how no matter how high and mighty you might be, at some point you will decline.
Yeah, and this was the great sort of stunning sensation for people from powerful European empires in later centuries. They stood in the Forum and they thought, Rome in ruins, Carthage, Mycenae, Athens, Troy, Pompeii, Sparta, etc. Why not London? Why not Paris? So yes, it made you think. I think one of the things we lose nowadays is you go to Rome and you look at these pieces of stone, and they are very powerful, but they're jigsaws of the past. They're historical puzzles. And what people had in the 18th and 19th centuries was this sensation that ruins were very much about the future. They weren't just about putting together pieces of the past. They made you think about yourself, your own country, your own future. If you were a politician, they warned you of the transients of all empires. If you were a poet, they said something about the flux of time, the way in which individuals are buried in the flow of time passing. If you were an artist, they challenged you to think about the posterity of your achievements. And huge numbers of people from different countries stood and thought about their own futures as they walked across the ground of the Forum.
I would think that one of the stranger episodes in cultural history was a few centuries ago in Europe, when there was this cult of ruins and so many artists and poets would go see old ruins. And there were some people who actually constructed fake ruins to make them look ancient, but in fact they were all artificial.
Yeah, it was sort of invented by England in the 18th century, and until the 1720s, if you had a ruined house in your garden, you simply knocked it down. From the 1720s, people began to say, well, actually, they're rather picturesque, eye-catching features on the skyline. And so old abbeys began to be preserved for that reason. But then, yes, from the 1730s onwards, you have people erecting artificial ruins, many of them built from modern materials, to liven up the skyline, to have symbolic meanings. One of the first artificial ruins in England was in the landscape garden at Stowe. And on one side of the valley, you had the temple of modern virtue. On the other side of the valley, you had the temple of ancient virtue. Ancient virtue was solid, intact, a Roman temple. Modern virtue was Gothic, falling down, crumbling. And so it was a kind of political statement to visitors to that garden. You have examples of wealthy bankers and lawyers who put up medieval castles in their back garden to somehow present an instant history, to create this invented family lineage.
We've been talking about various writers, and you draw the connection between Byron, the great romantic poet, and ruins, because he apparently grew up in a kind of a crumbling house in England.
Yeah, because I mean, I think many people picture Byron as he himself wanted you to picture him, which was swimming, pistol shooting, enjoying the pleasures of the Mediterranean. And he said, if I'm a poet, the air of Greece has made me one. But his formative years were spent in this crumbling ancestral abbey at Newstead near Nottingham in Britain. And he was 10 years old when a relative was accidentally killed, and he was living in some poverty in a furnished flat in Scotland with his mother. His father had left them, and he was told that he was suddenly Lord Byron, heir to this great mansion. And it took them a month before they could afford the coach fare south, and they pictured this fairy tale castle. They arrived to find all the trees on the drive felled to pay the grocer's bill. They found a farmer was the tenant of the abbey, cattle stabled in the halls, hay stashed in the corridors. And Byron only lived in the house from his early 20s, but during his teenage years, he was living in a cottage on the estate, exploring the ruins. And I think somehow in those cold, clammy, dilapidated vaults, he was on the one hand inspired by ancestral pride, on the other hand, introspective, reflective. He called himself the wreck of the line. He had this astonishing consciousness. And as he walked through the ruins, he would have seen smoke coming from the farmer's hearth in his own mansion. And I think, however gilded and dashing he was in his 20s, you have to think of him as this teenage boy to understand where his poetic sensitivity comes from. The egotism, the melancholic quality, the introspection, that comes from spending a childhood in ruins.
Seems to me there's a basic question about what one should do with ruins, and it really comes down to the archaeologists and the civil authorities who are in charge of these places. Do you try to preserve them? Do you, in fact, sometimes reproduce bits that have crumbled, or do you just let nature take its course and let them decay?
I think there's a kind of happy medium. I think archaeologists tend to feel that if a single stone falls from a ruin, that's somehow a great loss, a great failure. I think they also forget just how robust these structures are. If you take the Colosseum, in 1,500 years, it went from being an arena for public games to a place full of houses. People lived in the tiers of seats. It became a fortress with battlements. It became a gunpowder store. It blew up. It was used as a factory. It became a quarry. So in 6 months, we have one bill in the archives from the 1450s. Something like 1,400 carts of stone were taken away. Then it became a shrine. Now, it endured all of these experiences. Nowadays, if you go into the Colosseum, you won't see a single flower growing, because if it sprouts, it's sprayed with herbicide. You can't set foot on the stones because you're told they'll crumble. And I think there is a slight oversensitivity. The problem we have is the things that inspire the artist are those which clash with the archaeology. The people looking at the Colosseum, what inspired them was seeing it crumble. They enjoyed the monuments to the martyrs put up on the sand. Byron was inspired by hearing jackals in the arcades. Poe was inspired by its solitude. Piranesi by its blackness at night. Shelley by seeing it crumble. Henry James by the mists coming through the floor. And so on and so on. Take away all of these things and there's no inspiration. So since it was taken over by the state in 1870, not a single artist or writer has responded creatively.
Christopher Woodward, talking with Steve Paulson. Woodward is the director of the Holborn Museum of Art in Bath, England, and the author of the book In Ruins.